The World's Greatest Stories, brought to you by Nelson Armstead. Millions of stories have been told, but some of them, by virtue of their intense dramatic power, will live forever. Tonight you will hear such a story as Nelson Armstead brings you The Lie, a powerful and dramatic narrative written by a young Russian, Leonid Andreev. And now the world's greatest stories and Nelson Armstead.
Lying. I know you're lying.
What are you shouting about? Need everyone hear us?
And here she lied again, for I was not shouting. I was speaking in a quiet tone of voice. I was holding her hand and speaking gently and very quietly, while this venomous word lie hissed like a snake.
I love you, she continued. You should believe me. Doesn't this convince you?
And she kissed me. But when I wanted to hold her hand and press her close, she'd already gone. She left the dark passage, and I followed her into the room where a gay party was just ending. How did I know where it was? She told me I might come there, and I did so, observing couples dancing all night long. No one approached me or addressed me. And when they began to snuff the candles, I went up to her, and I said, "It's time to go. I'll see you home." She registered surprise.
"But I'm going home with him."
And she pointed to a tall and handsome person who did not even glance at us, the same person she had been dancing with all evening. And she took me into the empty room and kissed me. "You lie," I said very quietly.
"We shall meet tomorrow. You must come," she replied.
And I drove home alone. The next evening, I again saw her. I threatened, I implored, I ground my teeth. "Tell me the truth." But with a face as cold as snow, her eyebrows raised in surprise, her dark, unfathomable eyes shining mysterious and passionless, she answered me, "I'm not lying to you." And she knew that I could not prove she lied, and that all my heavy, massive creation of torturing thoughts would not be dissipated by one word from her, one lying word. I waited for it, and it came from her lips, sparkling on the surface with the colors of truth, but dark in its depths. She said,
"I love you. Am I not all yours?"
We were far from the town, and the snow-clad fields looked in through the dark windows. Above them was a darkness, and around them was a darkness, thick, motionless, silent. But the fields gleamed with their own latent light, like the face of a corpse in the dark. Just one candle threw its light over the well-heated room, and even on its reddish flame there appeared the pallid reflection of the dead fields.
"I want to know the truth, however sad it may be. Perhaps I shall die when I know it, but death is more welcome than life without truth. There's lie in your kisses, falsehood in your eyes. Tell me the truth, and I will leave forever," I said.
But she was silent, and her coldly searching glance penetrated my heart, drew out my soul, and studied it with strange curiosity. And I cried out, "Answer, or I'll kill you!"
"Kill me?" she calmly replied. "Sometimes life is so wearisome. But you cannot get truth by threats." And then I fell on my knees and clasped her hand and wept and implored for pity and the truth.
"Poor fellow," she said, putting her hand in my head. "Poor fellow.
Have pity," I prayed. "I yearn for the truth."
And as I looked at her smooth forehead, I thought that the truth was there behind that slender partition. I madly wanted to break the skull to find the truth. And there behind the white bosom beat her heart. And I madly wanted to tear that bosom with my nails to see, if only for once, an exposed human heart.
"Poor fellow," she said. "Poor fellow."
And the yellow flame of the candle flickered spasmodically, turned blue, and then went out. Darkness enveloped us. I could not see her face nor her eyes, for her arms had clasped my head, and I no longer felt a lie. I shut my eyes and neither thought nor lived, but merely absorbed the touch of her hands, and it seemed to me true. And in the darkness, her faint whisper sounded strange and fearsome. Put your arms about me. I'm afraid. And again there was silence. And again the faint whisper filled with fear. You want the truth, but do I know it? Oh, how I wish I knew it. Protect me. I'm so frightened. I killed her.
I killed her! When she lay a flaccid, lifeless mass at the window, beyond which gleamed the white fields, I put my foot in her corpse and laughed. It was not the laugh of a madman. Oh, no. I laughed because my breast heaved evenly and lightly, because within it reigned peace and happiness, and from my heart had fallen the worm that had been gnawing it. Bending down, I looked into her dead eyes. Large eyes, greedy for light, they remained open and resembled the eyes of a wax doll. Round, dull eyes that seemed to be covered with mica. I could touch them with my fingers, open and shut them. And I was not afraid, because in those black, unfathomable pupils, there no longer lived the demon of lie and doubt that so long had insatiably sucked my blood. When they arrested me, I laughed. And to those who seized me, this seemed terribly barbaric. They turned from me in disgust and drew back. And others, with imprecations on their lips, advanced straight toward me. But when they caught my joyful glance, their faces paled and their feet were rooted in the ground. Madmen, they exclaimed. And this word seemed to ease them, because it helped to solve the enigma, how I, a lover, could kill my beloved and yet love. Only one fat and jolly-looking individual called me by another name. It came as a blow and darkened the light in my eyes. Poor man, he said compassionately, without anger, for he was fat and jolly. Poor man. Don't call me that!
I don't know why I flung at him. I certainly didn't want to kill him or even touch him. But all those frightened people who considered me a madman and a criminal became all the more alarmed and screamed out so. And that made me laugh again. And when they led me out of the room where the corpse lay, I repeated loudly and obstinately, looking at the fat, jolly man, I'm happy, happy. And that was true. I became a panther in my stone cage. I walked and thought. I walked in one line across my cage from corner to corner. And my thoughts traveled along one short line, so heavily that it seemed as if I were carrying not merely a head, but a whole world on my shoulders. And these thoughts consisted of but one word. But what a vast and what a torturing and what a destructive word. Lie was the word. Again it darted forth, hissing from all the corners and coiling itself around my soul. But it had ceased to be a little snake. It had grown into a great, fierce, gleaming serpent, and it stung me and smothered me in its iron coils. And when I shrieked out with pain, as though my whole breast was swarming with reptiles, I could only utter that repulsive, hissing-like sound, lie. And as I walked with my thoughts, the smooth gray asphalt of the floor changed before my eyes into a gray, transparent abyss. My feet ceased to feel the touch of the floor, and I imagined I was floating at an immeasurable height above the misty darkness. And when my bosom heaved forth its hissing groan, there from below, from under the impenetrable shroud, there slowly rose a horrible echo, so slowly and feebly, as though it were traveling through 1,000 years, and in each particle of fog it lost some of its strength. I understood that there, below, it was whistling like the wind that tears down the trees. But it reached my ears in one short whispered word, lie. And this mean whisper wrought me into a rage, and I stamped on the floor and screamed, there is no lie, I've killed a lie. I purposely turned away, for I knew what it would answer, and slowly, from the bottomless abyss came the reply, lie. And so, as you see,
I'd made a terrible mistake. I'd killed the woman, but I'd made the lie immortal. Don't kill a woman until by prayer or torture or fire you've torn the truth from her soul. So I thought as I paced from corner to corner of my cell. Dark and dreadful is a place where she's carried the truth and the lie. And there I'm going. And at the very throne of Satan I shall clutch her, and falling on my knees will weep and say, tell me the truth. But God, oh God, that too is a lie. There's darkness there, an emptiness of the centuries of infinity. But she is not there. She is nowhere. But the lie has remained. It is immortal. I feel it in every atom of the air, and when I breathe, it enters my breast with hisses and tears and tears it. Oh, what madness it is for men to seek the truth. What anguish. Help me. Save me.
This has been the Russian story entitled The Lie by Leonid Andreev, as presented by Nelson Olmsted, who now has a few closing comments.
Ladies and gentlemen, I wish very much that I could be with you at this moment to ask you personally your reaction to this story. How did it affect you? What do you think it means? The Lie is a powerful, moving, dramatic narrative written by a young Russian who, I think, approaches that elusive mood that only Edgar Allan Poe could write. As to its meaning, there are two possible explanations. The story may be interpreted literally or symbolically. Literally, it is a dramatic revelation of an insane mind, the mind of a young man who was very madly in love with a flighty young woman, who for a time returned his affection with pleasure. And then she grew tired of him. But he, not being blind, could see the change in her and felt that she was lying when she repeated, I love you. She was afraid he would kill her if she told him the truth. But he knew and killed her just the same. Now, symbolically, and Andreev wrote many symbolical stories, the lie puts into words the never-ending but futile search that man makes for the truth. With horrifying pessimism, Andreev reveals his opinion that a man is not destined to know the truth, but must live his petty life like an ant, never discovering why he is here or where he's going. I should like to know what you think about the lie. Tomorrow night, our story is by de Maupassant, entitled A Coward. Until tomorrow, good night and good reading.
NBC presents Nelson Olmsted and his world's greatest stories three nights each week on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at this same time and over most of these same stations. Tomorrow night, a French story by Guy de Maupassant entitled A Coward. Join us at this same time.